call to order the Committee of the Higher Education Workforce Development. Welcome, Senator Boniff. I understand we're going to hear Senate File 2527, and you do have an amendment as well?
I do, Mr. Chair. So if we could adopt the amendment first. This is its first stop, so it is an author's amendment.
And committee members have copies of that. Is everybody finding that? I believe it, it's the A1 amendment. Senator, could you just go through the amendment and provide some overview?
Sure. And Mr. Chair, I think it might be helpful first to just move the amendment, and then I'll go through the amendment after I review the whole bill. If you could just move the amendment first.
I'm just wondering if through your explanation there might not be questions that would need to be answered before approving?
Well, we move it, and then we will ask the questions. So we're just moving it to be part of the discussion.
Senator Boniff moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those in opposition, same sign. Amendment is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, members, I'm so pleased to be before you with this Senate file, and I would actually like to acknowledge a few people for having this before you. I'd like to acknowledge my committee administrator, Dave Kornecki, Amy Wallstein, and actually Bern Hapke, who's sitting in the audience. These three individuals worked during the interim for many, many, many hours, interviewing many people, doing research on what's happening in other states, all around the goal of putting forward something this session that would create a foundation for what we hope will be a change in how we approach higher education. So having said that, if I step back, I just want to give you a little genesis of where this came from. There's a company in the community that I represent in Plymouth, Minnesota, called Bühler. And Bühler is a company whose parent company is in Switzerland, but they have a strong presence in Germany, and that's the greater part of their business. They opened a North American headquarters in Plymouth. And when they did that, they decided to bring the German model of education and training to Plymouth. And so I was actually asked to attend their ribbon cutting along with the mayor of Plymouth and speak at it. And so, of course, you're asked to speak at a ribbon cutting, and there's 1,000 people. I wanted to understand what I was speaking about. And I learned that they were launching a program whereby they were going to interview the surrounding high school students and pick 5 students that they thought were high potential for their area of expertise. It was a type of manufacturing. They picked these 5 students. They paid for them to go to Dunwoody for 3 years. They worked with Dunwoody to develop the kind of training they were going to get. And while these students are at Dunwoody, they're actually working at Bühler at the same time. They work, you know, a certain amount of time at Bühler, a certain amount of time in the classroom. And then 3 years later, they have full-time jobs. So that was the first year they did 5. They did, I believe, 4 the next time, 5 the next time. So they've done 3 cohorts. We actually were out at Bühler recently. We interviewed the kids. The kids are just, words cannot express the joy that they feel about having been a part of that program. They were asked the question, you know, do you want to stay with Bühler? And they were like, are you kidding? You know, they feel so much loyalty to that company because of that partnership relationship. So based on that, I started investigating how could we adopt a similar kind of model with the Minnesota, you know, type of experience, because we're obviously a very different work environment. And then on a parallel path, come to find out that the University of Minnesota sponsors a trip to Germany around this very same issue. So they brought a whole delegation of Minnesotans from the university, from MinSCU, from industry to Germany to study this very same approach. We learned that 70% of the young people in Germany are actually participating in some kind of approach like this. If you're an accountant, if you're in finance, if you're in manufacturing. And so, again, that just showed the opportunity. My staff, in addition, discovered other states were participating in a very robust way. North Carolina, which was just mentioned for the governor having taken strong action around that information technology certification, North Carolina is one of the states that are really leading the way, and that's because Siemens is in that state and has brought that forward. In addition, now South Carolina is competing with North Carolina, so they're doing this. So we really feel as though for Minnesota to embark on this journey, it would give us a leg up in terms of attracting talented youth, attracting companies, and enhancing our workforce. Our national focus around getting a college degree is leaving the technical worker skills gap, and we hear this all the time. 40% of the millennials have earned a bachelor's degree. They rank seventh in the nation for college attainment, but it has come at a huge cost. Student debt is now, last year when we sat around this table, we heard it was $29,000 per pupil on average. We're up to $31,497, with 70% of our students taking on loans. This is an attempt to do something about that trajectory. So what this bill does is it allows the commissioner of DALI to grant, so there's two parts to the bill. There's the apprenticeship part, but then in addition, there's a second part that the chamber actually brought forward to us that addresses our high school kids being able to access a similar type of training. And so that's the front part of the bill, so I'll address that first. But that allows the commissioner of DALI to grant exemptions to allow 16 and 17-year-olds the ability to enter into an approved training program. We actually had a provision in law that didn't allow that. The approved programs could be through a trade union, the Commissioner of Education, DEED, MNSCU, or the University of Minnesota. So the bill instructs DALI. So beyond that, the bill instructs DALI and the Department of Employment and Economic Development to create pilot programs to develop competency standards in three growth industries. So we just heard from the folks from Microsoft that their program has standards that the students are trained to fulfill, and then they get a certificate. What we're suggesting is that we pick three industries, and we've identified information technology as one of them. We've identified advanced manufacturing. That's actually one provision in the amendment, as we're changing the word precision manufacturing to advanced manufacturing. And here we have Kim Argoni, who will be speaking about the need in that industry, and perhaps she has some opinion about the term advanced manufacturing or precision. But we were recommended to make that change. And health sciences. You know, we have heard about the pending health shortage in workers, whether they be nurses, whether they be people to care for the elderly, or even doctors. And so we've identified those three subject areas as industry sectors we wanted to concentrate on. And then we've said that we want to include both DEED and DALI in this. We don't want to just have it be a Department of Labor and Industry, and they are the ones who have housed all the apprenticeship programs. But we want this to be looked at as a broader approach. So we're calling it the Pipeline Project. And Pipeline stands for Private Investment, Public Education, Labor, Industry, Experience. In keeping with our commitment to have a true pipeline through high school into post-secondary and then into the workforce. So this Pipeline Project would enable these three pilots, two of them to be run by the Department of Labor and Industry and one to be run by DEED. The DEED one would be our the information technology, and the DALI would be the advanced manufacturing as well as the health services. We want to see how it works and charge each of those two agencies with bringing the industry folks who are the experts to the table, as well as MNSCU, the University of Minnesota, the Chamber, other interested parties to the table around creating the standards, the skills needed to fulfill these careers, examining what a certificate program might look like, And that would be the next step. In addition, the amendment says that Deed and Dolly would then come back to us with a report on how that process worked, who was part of it, what are the next steps to actually fully implement these types of pipeline project programs. So that's the essence of the bill. And with that, I would like to turn it over to my testifiers to speak about their bill and then, of course, be available for questions.
Thank you, Senator Bonoff. Amy Wallstein, I'm the Director of Education and Workforce Development Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And I want to thank Senator Bonoff for bringing this legislation forward. I think we've heard the statistic in this committee a couple times already, but I wanted to reiterate that by 2020, 74% of Minnesota jobs require post-secondary education. Right now, we're at barely 69%. So given current trends, we're not on a path to have the skilled workers that we're going to need to fill forecasted jobs that require training beyond high school. So in addition to demographic pressure, it's clear to the state chamber through talking to more than 1,000 employers on one-on-one visits through Grow Minnesota each year and conducting over 70 workforce assessments in spring 2012 with MinSKU that Minnesota also faces a sizable skills gap in the labor market. There's high demand for skilled workers, but the skill levels of job applicants and employees are not keeping pace with the needs of employers. So one strategy to help to address that skills gap and that labor market pressure is to better align training with industry need and to produce degrees and certificates in the areas of greatest demand. So how do we know what industry needs? That's where the industry council concept comes in from the bill, by going directly to employers and asking them what their needs are. So this bill addresses how to do that systemically by establishing these industry councils to help develop training standards. The benefits of industry-recognized credentials are many. High school and post-secondary career and tech programs lead to associate's degrees, certificates, and industry-recognized credentials can help young people find skilled employment and give them the option of later returning to school for a higher degree. So I'd like to introduce Kimberly Aragone, who will talk a little bit more in detail about industry-recognized credentials and how, as an employer, those are utilized in hiring.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Bonoff, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I'm grateful for this opportunity. My name is Kimberly Aragone. I'm a second-generation family member in a business called Haberman Machine. We have two locations, one in Stillwater and one in Oakdale, and we are a precision machining job shop. We are a company that's been around for over 70 years, and my family has had the joys of having it for the last 30 years. In the last 4 years, we have worked with Minnesota Dolly and getting an apprenticeship program established and offering credentials to our employees who are entry-level operators and our machinists who are interested in learning credential programs as well. It has been an important task for our company to help support getting that skills gap narrowed and growing our own machinists. I'm excited for this bill and the opportunity that it offers for our youth. Something that needs to happen is getting our youth credentialed or competent, giving them some kind of level of competency so that a career path can be chosen, whether it's going on to college, whether it's going on to post-training of some kind, or whether it's going out into the workforce. This is going to help establish some framework that's going to allow our students to be employable earlier on and gain a benefit back to the businesses sooner than later, which is something we're all desperate to have. So I appreciate the opportunity, and I thank you.
Well, and Ms. Argoni, you know, after meeting with you a few weeks ago, I was so inspired by you and your organization and Luann, who's also here with us today, that we asked you back. And so we really appreciate that you were willing to spend your time in that way and speak on behalf of the bill.
Absolutely. Thank you.
At this time, do we have questions by the committee? Yes, Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Whoops, sorry. Senator Bonoff, I'm still trying to understand the basics of this. So when would a student enter this program? Would they enter it during their high school years? Would it be in lieu of a technical college? How do you see that?
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, There would not be a standalone institute or institution. The way I envision this is that these programs would be offered at a MinSCU or at the University of Minnesota, or could be offered in one of our not-for-profit privates, that we would come up with in these industries, the industry councils would come up with what they're looking for to fulfill jobs. And then part of the industry council would include the educators sitting on the task force. They would then develop curriculum to fulfill the standards that could then be offered at any institution. So we wouldn't, I don't foresee that this would replace in any way any type of education, just like, for example, the Bueller company chose to partner with Dunwoody. And Dunwoody is now fulfilling Bueller's needs. We hear all the time about the skills gap, and we hear about the unemployment of our recent college graduates, and it's like there's a disconnect. You know, we want to get the match. And so if we can have our young people in programs that we know the companies are looking for, and then not only just in the programs, but while they're there working in the company, so they get the experiential learning, and then when they're done, they actually have that job. So that's how it's envisioned. This doesn't do that yet. All this does is bring the folks together to create the standards and the competency needs so that our institutions can take it from there.
Thank you.
Yes, Senator Sharon.
Thank you. And these standards and competencies are in these three areas that you've described. So,
Mr. Chair, yes, Senator Sharon.
Is it like a core curriculum that then can be applied at any healthcare institution or any, information technology
Senator
business
Bonner.
Or precision manufacturing? Is it a core curriculum that all or like the one that's being described here is designed specifically by Dunwoody for a specific corporation that works specifically within that situation and may or may not be transferable?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, I'm going to have Ms. Aragone talk about a program that she has worked with, NIMS, but I also want to say in particular with the health sciences, that one's challenging because we have shortages in many different areas. As I mentioned, we've got the nursing shortage. We actually put this one forward because we had heard that aging services had a need. But you're going to hear from the aging services in the next part of the committee. They're going to do an overview of they're already doing some apprenticeship stuff. So it will be up to that industry council to decide which area in health services they're going to develop first. And I think whatever we do first doesn't mean it'll be the only one, but it'll be a model for others to follow.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Sharon. Our particular program that our industry endorses across the country is NIMS. NIMS stands for the National Institute for Metalworking Skills, and it is a credentialed program that has stackable credentials in 52 different areas across 52 credentials at a minimum right now. That's growing across 23 different areas within our machine tool industry. And it offers different levels of competency. So there's level one, level two, and level three. And we're talking about advancing that even further now. But the best part about that is that it's industry recognized already. It's already out there in place. And it's something that is measured by ANSI regularly. So it has to stay relevant.
And therefore transferable.
Yes. Exactly. Yes, ma'am.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question about the health services area. Doesn't that industry already have standards? I mean, there's certified nursing assistants. My daughter earned her a certified nursing assistant, and there was quite a bit of testing, and there were actual practicals where she had to actually go to a facility and prove that she had the skills to be certified. And so I'm wondering, is that the type of thing you're planning, and doesn't the health services industry already have that when it comes to at least nursing?
Mr. Chair and Senator Ortman, when we first put this in here, we had been approached by the aging services community because there's a huge shortage around long-term care needs and taking home care for seniors and many different areas. And so we'd leave that to the industry council of how best to implement the health services part.
Ms. Wallstein?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, I think that that is at the type of model that we're looking at, is how students can build upon previous experience with one credential, move on to the next one, and some, you know, ramping too as well. You know, if life gets in the way, they can take the exit ramp, come back in, go to another level with the certifications.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Ortman.
Thank you. My point is, I think that it's already happening. And, you know, the nursing home that my daughter works at is helping her with tuition reimbursement to go and get her RN degree. And I think there's already a lot of that working in the health services industry. I'm not so sure in some of these other industries that you're talking about. But I also don't want to replace current standards that have been attained and set up new standards and new benchmarks for people when they've already attained certain status. So explain to me how you're going to work in the standards that already exist.
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Ortman, certainly in the medical field, we're not going to replace an RN or an LPN or any licensed degree with any other standards. We're looking for a way to be able to allow students coming out of high school or mid-career, you know, to Ms. Wallstein's point, on-ramp, off-ramp, to be able to get into a field. That's great that your daughter is getting tuition reimbursement. I don't think that that's happening widely. We want to look at how we can create the greatest opportunity for the most. I mean, we have a huge shortage. We have a mental health services shortage. And so that's what that industry council will be charged with. So,
Senator Sharon.
Well, I think where we're asking is that you were describing a certification, that a person gets a gradual certification process that can move from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And in the healthcare field,
it's different.
It's different. Yes. In that it's licensure. You know,
right.
You are achieving various scope of practice approvals based on a variety of factors. And then there is a recognition. It's not necessarily, it might be a certification for nursing assistant or nursing, and a PCA might have one. But then there's various levels of progression in nursing, and that's true in other healthcare fields as well. And they're overseen by boards, and those boards determine the educational requirements and the standards of practice. So we're just saying,
different.
Don't
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, we're not going to mess with that.
Another system that isn't necessary.
Yeah. Mr. Chair and Senator Sharon and Senator Ortman, if this helps support that from a business aspect, getting experience at the time you're doing education also supports a well-rounded person at the end of the day. And I know they can go on to school and they can come out qualified in many ways, but the experienced candidates are going to take precedence with education, especially over those who are just educated. So what's nice about this piece of it is that if they're in high school and they're getting that experience and exposure already at the time they're getting some of that education, that really supports them being a little more balanced as well. Helps business.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Sharon, Senator Ortman, the aging services, people who brought it forward to us and in terms of their approach to apprenticeship are speaking after us. So if you, with regard to those questions, if you would be willing to let them address them when they're at the table. Thank you.
Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to share an experience that I had recently visiting the 916 Career and Technical Center at Century College. And they're doing EMT certifications with high school students and some dental assistant certifications with high school students. And I met this one young woman who was from White Bear Lake. She was in high school. She was doing her EMT program there. She had her entire healthcare education and career future mapped out with that as a foundational point. So I think there's an interesting opportunity at these early ages to bring them in, and there is that precedent. So I just think it's interesting for the conversations. She'll get into the regular system, you know, with licensure as she proceeds. But her passion for it and the fact that she was already able to tap into it at that early age was really pretty exciting. Same thing with the young women doing the dental program. It was really cool.
And members, the other two industries that people have come forward to us and asked if they could participate, one was hospitality, who said there's a real need for trained workers in that area, and the other one was ag services. So we didn't necessarily think we had enough money to do five pilots to start, but as we move to other committees, if somebody wants to talk to me about moving out health services and moving in ag or hospitality, I'm open to that. So.
Senator Sharon, did you?
Just that I think the point is well taken, that we believe in apprenticeship, believe in trying to get people getting their certifications earlier. Yep. The assumption that you have to have a post-high school degree is based on the fact we don't have other systems in place. So I understand that. We're just saying that they're in the one area that you mentioned, I think Senator Ortman and I are saying they do clinical, they do apprenticeship. Right. Healthcare is full of clinical time and apprenticeship. So we'll just raising
that.
Your consciousness to that, whether it's in high school or in college or ever, it has apprenticeship as an essential characteristic of clinical training. And we don't want to build a competing or conflicting, confusing system for the healthcare industry that's already struggling.
Good. Any additional questions? I'm just going to reinforce some comments, Senator, that you mentioned earlier, and that is when we were doing our listening tour, 22 campuses this summer, we heard pretty loud and clear about we need tuition help from students. We also heard that we'd really like mentorships, internships, apprenticeships, hands-on experiences from students. And I think in addition to Buehler, we also saw a great program up in Red River Valley at Moorhead, where the technical college had partnered with Massey Ferguson. We're training students there to become mechanics on farm machinery. So I think there are things going on, but I think the proposal here, we're looking at expanding that, looking into new areas, and it's something that you and I heard for sure from students and around the state. So thank you for initiating this. Appreciate that very much.
Thank you.
With that, would you like to move?
Mr. Chair, I would, and Senator Sparks is here. Senator Sparks, would you think the appropriate place for this to go next is your committee?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, I think that probably would be a good idea just because we didn't hear from either the Department of Employment and Economic Development or the Department of Labor and Industry, and we do have jurisdiction over those two.
Great. Good. And members, we did ask for an appropriation, and the amendment moved the appropriation from the Workforce Development Fund to the General Fund. That was our intent, was to have it come from the General Fund. And the thinking being that if we're really going to staff these two committees and have the industry there and do the research necessary to make sure the standards are done well and competency issues identified, that each of those pilots are basically $100,000. So that's the rationale for that request. But it will not come from this budget. It would come from the Senator Tomasoni's budget.
Good. Any other comments, questions?
One more, sorry.
Yes, Senator Sharon.
I did hear you say, Senator Bonoff, that you've established which of these content areas would be in the pilot programs. We have had conversations outside of this hearing about considering agriculture instead of maybe healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know when that gets established and whether or not that is a better idea or not, but I want that to remain on the table for consideration.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, I think we'll have those conversations between now and Senator Sparks' committee, and we'll make, if we amend it, we'll do it right there.
Good. All right. Would you like to move?
I would.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'd like to move Senate File 2527 as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Jobs, Agriculture, and Economic Development Policy.
Rural Development.
Rural Development. Thank you.
Very good. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Passed.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Chair, while I'm walking over, you feel free to invite the next group of testifiers up. And members, the next group is testifying to just share about current apprenticeships that are happening. So we have a sense of what's going on out there.
Yes, we'd like to welcome South Central College, and we have Ms. Marcia Danielson. And is it Mr. Ajax?
Correct, yes.
Very good. Ms. Danielson, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the committee members for this opportunity. My name is Marcia Danielson. I'm the Dean of Global Outreach and Strategic Partnerships at South Central College. We have campuses located in Faribault and in North Mankato. I'm here today representing the president of South Central College, Dr. Annette Parker, who was called away due to a death in the family. She's in Michigan. I'm happy to provide an overview of Dr. Parker's work on the Obama administration's Advanced Manufacturing Partnership 2.0 Steering Committee, which I will refer to as AMP from this point forward, Advanced Manufacturing Partnership. She and Eric Spiegel, who is the president of Siemens that was mentioned earlier, co-chair the Demand-Driven Workforce Solutions Work Group. It is one of five work groups within the AMP initiative. The others include Transformative Technologies, NNMI, which stands for National Network for Manufacturing Innovation, Scale Up Policy, and Image of Manufacturing. The Workforce Work Group, which is co-chaired by Dr. Parker and Eric Spiegel, have taken the liberty to look at four key component areas. Advanced manufacturing career pathways. We've talked about much of that today. This would be an opportunity nationally to allow dual credit to be earned. At the same time you're earning high school credit, you would be earning credit at college. And with the goal to accelerate the time needed from high school to employment. An example of that, which will take place this fall at South Central College, our automotive technician students at Faribault High School will take their class in automotive technician. And in fact, we're going to hold that on the South Central College campus. And a Faribault High School instructor will teach that. And the learners will receive college credit at the same time that they are earning high school credit. And because we were talking about credentials as well, that will be the first step in their knowledge toward getting their first Automotive Services Excellence, or ASE, certificate as well. The second area, the key component area for the workforce group, is portable, stackable credentialing system. We're looking at putting in place a national system for this, where colleges and universities will start by modularizing their curriculum. So what that means is instead of having larger components, we'll break it into smaller components. So if you're going to take a four-credit class, that four-credit class may be broken down into smaller units. And that allows us, as Senator Kent was saying, easier on-ramps and off-ramps, depending on what life is giving you. So we'll be able to individualize learning much easier for that learner. At the same time, we will be mapping the earned credentials at the colleges to those third-party industry credentials, as we had just talked about. An example here in our machining program, when individuals take the first set of courses, they will gain the Computer Integrated Machining Basic Technician Certificate, or something that we call Right Skills Now. And the learners at the same time as completing that will then test for the NIMS credential, which was spoke about in earlier. And that is they will do the National Institute of Metalworking Skills Machining Level 1 certificates, and they will actually test for four of those in that basic technician stage. The industry-recognized credentials really allows employers to know exactly what knowledge, skills, and abilities the learner is requiring. Currently, if someone gets a SIM basic technician certificate at South Central College, and an employer is trying to compare someone who graduates from South Central College to somebody who might have graduated from Alec Technical College, it's difficult for the employer to know what exactly that means because it depends on each school what they're doing. When you map them to those external credentials, they know exactly what knowledge, skills, and ability those students have. There's also an international movement underway to create international credentialing system, and Dr. Parker is also serving on that manufacturing panel, which is working to create something they're calling Certificate Qualifications Framework, and this is an initiative that's funded by the Lumina Foundation, just for your information. The third area of AMP 2.0 is connecting veterans to manufacturing careers, and this is an opportunity where we're mapping military experiences and credentials to those being earned in college courses or to positions at employers. If a veteran is interested in directly going to employment, the employers with this translation of military certificates to skill sets that might be found in a job description, it's going to be easier for those companies to identify how to get that military personnel and their knowledge and skills to work as quickly as possible. The Alcoa Corporation is serving on the steering committee of AMP 2.0, and their company has created a skills translator, which is taking those military credentials and matching them to the competencies within their job descriptions. All of this in an effort to accelerate the time that it takes to get veterans into their jobs. Likewise, the colleges are working to map those military skills to our courses. An example, Ivy Tech in Indiana gives a U.S. Navy logistics specialist credit for their introduction to logistics course, their supply chain management course, and their transportation system courses. Finally, what we're talking about today, the fourth initiative and key component, is the regional apprenticeship models. And all this in an effort to establish work-based learning partnerships throughout the United States. In the apprenticeship best practices, we have found that they include three components. The employer sponsor is one component, or leg of the stool. The other is the educational institution. And the third being a registration agency. Here at Dolly, we have Rich Davey, who is working in that capacity. Dow, Alcoa, Siemens are establishing partnerships in California and Texas for a pilot. South Central College and Harper Community College in Illinois are in their initial planning stages of developing partnerships for apprenticeship in the Midwest. So that work is already taking place. In fact, you talked about North Carolina, and we just returned back last Thursday night from North Carolina. We were down to review the Apprenticeship 2000 model in Charlotte. We're able to actually go through the Siemens plant there, and we met with several of the German-based manufacturing companies that started that initiative. We met with Central Piedmont Community College, which is the community college education component, as well as the Olympic Community of Schools high schools there. Their initiative has just changed and is now being run through their Department of Commerce. But basically, that program was a cohort or a block of classes that are being offered one day a week. They take three classes in one day. So maybe 8 o'clock, a noon start, and something late afternoon. They're home with their families by 9 o'clock at night. They are full-time employees of the company with benefits. They're paid during the class time so that the training is considered part of that 40-hour week. The company pays their tuition, book, and fees at the college. The apprentice takes about 3.5 years. They earn their associate's degree, and likewise, they earn their journeyperson status in mechatronics. All of that as well is mapped to those external industry credentials like NIMS, which we talked about. So the purpose for all four of the AMP, what we're calling the work groups within the workforce committee, is really to provide a greater number of technically trained employees to fill those vacant manufacturing jobs and to support the future growth in manufacturing. And South Central College's involvement is really centered around our region and our state manufacturing employers and their need for technical employees. It's our commitment to help meet the needs in our communities. Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for your attention. I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Ms. Danielson, thank you so much for your testimony. Very interesting. I think perhaps before we ask you questions, we'll hear for Mr. Ajax, hear from Mr. Ajax, and then we can ask both of you. But thank you so much. And thank you so much for being willing to be here today.
You're welcome. Thank you very much, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Eric Ajax. I am a third-generation metal former. My grandfather founded our company 67 years ago, and we produce about 70% of the appliance hinges sold in North America. We also produce about 70% of the metal fire extinguisher enclosures sold throughout North America as well. We're located in Fridley, Minnesota. I've personally been with the company 33 years, and it's a wonderful ride. And I can say that I recently returned from Switzerland as a guest of the Swiss consulate studying their youth apprenticeship program. They brought me over there for 10 days, and I did have the opportunity to see Bueller firsthand. And in Switzerland, the statistics are very much the same as Germany. Approximately 70% of their 15-year-olds enter a four-year apprenticeship program. They're paid throughout that entire time. Then they serve 1 year in the military. And I can say that from an economic development standpoint, it really has been beneficial for Switzerland. It's something that they have very low unemployment of their 20-somethings. It's single digit because of the training that they've received in over 200 different career fields. But enough of that, I'd like to share some of my personal experience and my colleagues' experience with apprenticeship here in Minnesota. We first partnered with the Minskew system and Dunwoody and Dolly back in 1994 to develop an apprenticeship program to train punch press operators and precision sheet metal fabricators and tool and die makers. And the program was so successful for us. In 1997, we graduated our very first woman press operator. And I'm happy to say that Dolly had to change their stamp from Journey Men to Journey Worker, which was really a neat experience to see a woman be successful in a non-traditional career such as metal forming. Over the last 20 years, we've graduated more than 50 Class A Journey Workers. It's a four-year program. We have full NIMS credentials with all of our skill sets in the tool and die making, punch press, sheet metal fabrication, and also machine maintenance. And I can say that we've had a real diversity of individuals graduate from our apprenticeship program. We've been able to put single moms through the program, first-generation immigrants, youth offenders we've been quite successful with, and they have not reoffended because of the training that they were able to receive. And I think one of the most exciting things for us in the last 4 years, we've added 13 returning veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan, and they're involved with our apprenticeship training program. We really see some strong transferable skills when they have served the country for 12 to 19, 20 years, and they can bring those back and directly apply those in advanced modern manufacturing. So it clearly has been an exciting model for us. It's helped us grow our business. We export more than a third of our product out of the United States. China, India, Vietnam are very strong customers for us. Mexico, Western Europe. We run the safest metal forming plant in the world. In the fact, we've worked 24 years with only 1 8-hour incident of lost time. And that we really attribute to the professional training that we're able to put forth with our apprenticeship program. We're very cost competitive with our international competition, and we're several profit points higher than most of our competition because of the high skill set that our Class A journey workers can put can put forth for our customers, helping them and our company make more money. Lastly, when it comes to compensation, we start an entry-level machine operator at a living wage of someplace between $12 and $15 an hour. And by the time someone completes a four-year apprenticeship in our organization, they have the opportunity to more than double that entry-level wage, save for retirement, live the American dream, provide great benefits for their children, and really accomplish good things for themselves and their family. These are great jobs that create a lot of value for the state of Minnesota and create wealth. I always emphasize that there are only three ways to create wealth in the state of Minnesota or the United States. You can grow it, you can manufacture it, or you can take it out of the ground. Other than that, we're really washing each other's shirts. So these are truly important jobs. So, Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to share some of our story. I would invite any of you, if you'd like to come and tour our facility and meet one of our 50 Class A Journey Worker graduates, we'd be honored to have that opportunity.
I'd love to do that. Thank you, Mr. Ajax. Senator Sharon.
Yes, I thank you. I appreciated this, Mr. Ajax. What could you help me understand what your role is in this apprentice? What is your part of the partnerships, or what is your role in the apprenticeship program?
Well, we're
Mr. Ajax.
Number one, pay for it all. Pay up to $5,000 a year for each one of our colleagues for their education, training, and professional development. One of the requirements with our agreement with Dolly is 144 hours a year of job-related education, and that's in addition to the 8,000 hours or 2,000 hours a year of job-related education. Most of our apprentices will complete a two-year associate's degree. And the really exciting thing is that we have quite a number of them that go on beyond their Class A Journey Workers card. We have a young woman who immigrated here from Guyana, for example, 10 years ago to create a better life for her children. And she went through our four-year apprenticeship program, earned her associate degree, and now she's been promoted into the office and is a key account manager with us. So really my role is more of a coach and a mentor to help our apprentices get through the program and really grow beyond that. A Class A journey worker into other roles. We have a veteran that came back 8 years ago from Iraq, went through our four-year apprenticeship program in tool and die making. He started at about $14 an hour. He's now our quality manager. He earned a Class A Journey Workers card and an associate's degree from Hennepin Technical College with honors, and he's now finishing a four-year degree at the University of Minnesota, of which we're paying 100%. Mm-hmm. This young man is about 32 years old, doesn't have one dime of student debt.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. Thank you for all that you're doing here and that you're describing. My questions are probably so simple that you're not able to answer them. They're so simple.
Okay.
I'm trying to get a sense. You're paying for it. These are they're engaged in an educational program one day a week. Did you say? Or oh no, that was your program, wasn't it, Marcia? Are these people coming to you through Dolly, or are these your employees that you're merging into this, or how do you?
Well, we really have many pathways. We provide several $10,000 a year scholarships to first-year Dunwoody students. We provide them with a $15 an hour paid internship for their second year, so we get to test drive each other. We've been involved with several sector training partnerships with a dozen of our competitors, some national foundations. The DEED has been involved with it, Empowered, the Right Skills Now. We have a program up at Anoka Technical College called a Precision Sheet Metal Program. It's a fast-track program with 100 hours of basic training. And so we really recruit out of those three areas and find the absolute best and brightest, plus the military. We go to every military job fair there is, and that is just a gold mine for us.
And then one more. Sure. I don't want to dominate this, but you mentioned offender education and the impact on recidivism. Could you just address that portion of a little bit? I'm very interested in extending educational opportunities into prisons or into places.
Sure.
Because I think it is the best way to reduce recidivism. So,
Mr. Ajax.
Yes, I'd be happy to comment. We were able to take the Empowered program at Hennepin Technical College, which is fast-track training for punch press and a couple of other advanced manufacturing on the road. We took it to the correctional facility in Shakopee for women and also Stillwater. We currently have a couple of programs going at Stillwater, and we have been able to provide youth offenders 18 to 24 years old that made a mistake in their life with some training while they're still incarcerated. And then when they're released, they're coming out with NIMS credentials. They're coming out with some solid experience that they can come to an employer with. We've hired several, and it's really worked out well. It's a big uphill battle for a convicted felon to re-enter the workplace, find a place to live. It's virtually impossible for them to rent. They do a background check, and they won't rent to a felon. I have one young man that's almost completed his Class A Journey Workers card, a youth offender, went through the Empowered program. He just bought a home for himself last summer. So he did a complete end run around it. And I am absolutely convinced that this young man will never enter the criminal justice system again because of what Hennepin Technical College and Hired and some of our other partners did to help him get onto that career ladder and complete his apprenticeship.
I think this is fabulous. Thank you for.
You're welcome.
Are you paying for that as well?
Of course.
And Senator Sharon, you know, to the earlier conversation about health services, and again, we're happy to consider moving that aside, but that is the missing link, is this industry having the financial stake in it as well, really coming up to the plate and saying, you know, they're partners with our young people, and it's wonderful. And Ms. Danielson, I love all that you're doing with these various councils, and so we'd like you to bring your expertise to your home state and help us as we formulate these pilots and expand them. And so we trust that Ms. Aragone and you know, you at South Central are going to be key players as we develop these standards. Senator Klassen.
Yes, thank you. Ms. Danielson, I'm curious on that dual crediting program. What is the criteria used for identifying your high school teachers?
The actual high school teachers in that particular case, that teacher, Mark Lessman is his name at Faribault High School, he has all the certifications and credentials necessary to teach either community college or at high school. I'm not part of that actually credentialing part, but those credentials are very well spelled out on what they would need to be.
Madam Chair.
Senator Klassen.
Just to follow up. So the credentials that you're looking at that high school teacher would be the same as the staff at your technical college?
I'm not positive about that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Danielson, perhaps you can get follow-up information back. That would be great.
I'd be happy to do that, Madam Chair. It is a very complicated. I don't know if you really want the three-ring binder, but
he might, because he's a former educator.
Certainly provide you that.
Yes, in our class.
Sure. Thank you. I bring that up because I know in other situations where high schools have tried to come together with community colleges, there's been an issue there about credentialing, mm-hmm. and so I'm just wondering in your area how you handle that. So thank you.
Yes, Madam Chair and Senator Klassen, I understand that to be true, and there are probably in the room more qualified people to answer that, but I understand that there are even different qualifications for a university to teach courses in a high school versus a community college. So it's quite complicated.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Now, finally, we have the folks from Aging Services. So we're anxious to hear what they say and get their input as to whether we should keep them in or vote them off the island. I'm just teasing. Was that harsh?
Well, good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Good afternoon.
Members of the committee, my name is Adam Sumala. I'm the Vice President of Membership and Strategic Affiliations at Aging Services of Minnesota. Happy to be with you today and to share a little bit about our apprenticeship journey at Aging Services. When we started this conversation, it was really based on some challenging demographic factors. We have, as you all are aware, the boom of older adults that are going to be hitting our service sector. We have the decline of the available labor force. And we have some massive changes underway in our field to be more person-directed, to evolve the care and delivery models that we have in our field. And so when we stepped back and we looked at that sort of perfect storm of workforce challenges, we looked to our partners in higher education because we knew education was going to be a key piece of that future for us. And thanks to a innovation grant from Health Force Minnesota, which is the Center for Healthcare Excellence within the MinSCU system, they provided us funding to step back and do some research and development to begin developing this, what has become our health support specialist registered apprenticeship program. When we did that, we selected the registered apprenticeship model for four basic reasons. The first was we felt we needed deeper expertise than what we currently had in our workforce. That those, unfortunately, there's just not enough folks to represent Senator Ortman's daughter coming into our field or staying in our field. Between the person-directed philosophy, the clinical skills, health support specialist really provided us that opportunity to develop new curriculum in our field. It is delivered through seven college courses. You have a flyer in front of you that lists what those are. It's nine college credits. It's 145 hours of classroom education. It really elevates that frontline caregiver role. And those caregivers are coming to us from a variety of different areas. They're nursing assistants, they're dietary staff, activity staff, environmental service staff. All of them cross-training and elevating that role as a household blended worker team member. The second area, and I should mention too, and thank you, Dean Bell, for being here, we did that work with our college consortium partners from Century College, Ridgewater College, Hennepin Technical College, and South Central College. We wouldn't have been able to do any of that curriculum development work without having really outstanding curriculum experts at the table as well. And they were paired with providers. So it wasn't academia coming up with what this curriculum was. It was a curriculum writer sitting down with a director of nursing or frontline staff talking about what the right mix of this credential should be. The second reason was we heard that there was not such ideal training going on in our field to some degree, that there was a disconnection. We found providers, employers were saying things like, well, we get them out of their program, and then we have to teach them how it really works on the job. And anytime you have that disconnection from the education experience and what happens in the organization, there's an opportunity for better alignment. And so the registered apprenticeship program gives us 2,500 hours of on-the-job learning. So the apprentices might be going to class, let's say our meaningful activities coursework. So I'm learning in that course how to do small group activities, large group activities, and then I'm bringing that experience back into the building, and I'm applying it. I'm setting up a game of cards with three gentlemen. I'm responsible for Doris's birthday party in the household next week. I'm taking that concept learned in the classroom, and I'm applying it in the building. The third reason was we were seeing organizations all over the state developing new models, just sort of organically. They were creating their own new training models. They were blending this role and that role. And we really felt there was a benefit of stepping back and working with the Department of Labor to create a new career in the field of older adult services. And that in doing so, we create a baseline for what that role is, but also the flexibility for organizations to adjust. So the model I'd give you as an example is a nurse is a nurse is a nurse. When I say RN, you know what that means. Obviously a nurse in a hospital, in a nursing home, sitting at a Senate hearing table, all do very different things with that knowledge base, but you know what it is. A health support specialist functions very similarly in that a health support specialist is a health support specialist is a health support specialist, and they'll be cross-trained by the time they're finished with this apprenticeship program in all of those different areas you see in front of you, but can be utilized in very different ways by the organizations that employ them. All of our HSS apprentices are incumbent employees. They all are nursing assistants as a base, and they work upwards from there. And then finally, and this one is the one where we sort of had to take our medicine as a profession, as a field, and say there's just not enough folks that are interested in this work based on the wages that don't reflect the honorable work of caregiving, the job descriptions that are just not as attractive as they should be for folks. And so as we moved forward, we really wanted to recraft this frontline caregiving career. We wanted to elevate it in the field. We wanted to provide additional education to build that societal respect. And hopefully with that comes higher wages as well as part of the registered apprenticeship program. To oversee all of this work, we identified a registered apprenticeship advisory council. And I, too, would echo the praises for Rich Davey at the Department of Labor's Registered Apprenticeship Unit. He has been a steady hand at the wheel for us, helping us develop our standards, helping us work with employers all over the state to make sure that they're comfortable with those standards, and as well as the Department of Human Services around a scholarship program. There's obviously still a lot of work left to be done to help this program grow and replicate and come to scale in Minnesota. But with that, I've probably already taken a little too much time, and I'll maybe turn it over to my colleague, Ms. Bell.
Thank you very much, and you haven't taken too much time, and we do have questions. Good. But hear from you first, Ms. Bell, and then we'll ask our questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Bonoff and members of the committee. It's an honor to be here, and I appreciate it. I heard some of the questions that were posed earlier, and perhaps I can help gain some insight into that.
Thank you.
I have been in healthcare for over 35 years as a registered nurse. I've been in higher education for 15 years and at Century College in Minsky for the last 10 years. So,
and would you just say your name?
And my name is Kathleen Bell.
Sure.
I'm Dean of Nursing and Allied Health at Century College in White Bear Lake, Minnesota.
Great.
All right. In my role at the college, I do supervise a number of healthcare programs, and within those programs, we have externships and internships and residency programs, and also now the apprenticeship program. I see it as a wonderful opportunity for students and industries to gain further education. I also, in my role, am the lead administrator for a newly awarded Department of Labor TAC grant and for orthotics and prosthetics. We will be looking at a couple of those certificates and see if we can replicate an apprenticeship model. So it's a very exciting thought for us, especially for a field called a mastectomy fitter. So I have been working with the health support specialists program since conception, I think, for the last several years, as well as faculty that I supervise. And as we mentioned, there's four Minsky colleges currently working together. It's been a wonderful collaborative effort. We have learned a lot. We've learned a lot about our system and how to better enhance work or processes for students. And also, it has been almost a best practice for working with industry partners in order to meet the needs of both academia and industry and student needs and patient needs. So it's been very exciting. I kind of envision it as almost a triangle of retention of the worker. That's really what this career path is about. As Adam mentioned, the students are already nursing assistants when they come into the program. We've identified other skill sets that would enhance the patient care at long-term care facilities and also, and very importantly, enhance their experience as a worker in order to increase retention of the workforce at long-term care. It's very expensive to orient new workers in any healthcare or any industry. And by retaining the workers, by having them involved in their profession, this is a staged program where they get They take online courses or in-class courses through our consortium, and each time they complete a course, they get acknowledgement from the workforce. So it's been a great aspect that way. So I see it with the retention of the workers, a post-secondary certificate that students can build on, and also enhancing patient-centered care. That's the whole key to the success of this program. So we've been working together to streamline systems. We have ongoing learning amongst the MNSCU schools, for instance, admission procedures or registration issues. We have also been able to support long-term care with their ability to look at themselves differently and to create more of an ongoing learning environment for their workforce and for their industry in order to see what they need to do to envision their work differently. We have enhanced the nursing assistant role. I had heard mentioned that it already has a certification. It has a certification for a set amount of knowledge, and this particular program and apprenticeship increases and builds on that. There's nothing else like this out there. So it was a very innovative program. I think we have learned a lot. We have more to do. Mm-hmm. And the students, because it's not the highest wage in healthcare, I think support to enable the best care for our patients and to keep going forward as our demographics keep changing, it's very key to success for our community, our healthcare community in Minnesota.
Well, thank you. And I guess then I'm still left with this question, because you have done, you know, a remarkable job, and really it looks like you've set forward what it is that we want to have happen for our pilot programs. Do you think that you've already accomplished setting forward all the competencies and the skills and, you know, that are needed, or do you think that there are still areas that hasn't happened, and so you would want to be part of this pilot?
Madam Chair, I would say that when we look out over the course of sort of where Minnesota needs apprenticeships and where they would be helpful, is it possible that in the healthcare field that there are other apprenticeships that might want to come to scale or come into being? There might be. As far as the goals that you've laid out, I think our registered apprenticeship program has in large part achieved those goals. But that doesn't mean that we're done or not in need of sort of additional assistance in continuing to grow. But we could certainly work with you on what those other pieces would be.
Thank you.
I think just to add to that, if I may.
Spell.
Mm-hmm, thank you. It's been a slow process of getting industry to change and to offer the support, the financial support for the ongoing education of their workforce. It's a commitment. It's a very tightly regulated, long-term care is very tightly regulated and financially challenged field, and so any support has been very important that we can offer.
Thank you. Any other questions from members? Thank you for sharing your work with us. Nice job.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So, members, that completes our business today. I just wanted to review on Tuesday. Senator Wieger will have a bill before us with regard to the alignment of K-12 and post-secondary. And then we passed some initiatives last session, and sometimes I think that we don't always come back and hear what happened, and so then you have the sense, you know, did it happen? And so the things that got passed through our